In this episode, we are going to be reviewing The Gospel According to St. Matthew from 1964, which was directed by Pier Paolo Pasolini. My guest today is Janine Gilliard, who is a journalist and a longtime correspondent for Fra Noi. And she's a big, major Italian film fan. Her blog, Italian Cinema Today, which I found online, which she started in 2005. Janine, thanks so much. I'm glad that I finally got you on here.
Thank you. It's great to be here. I've been enjoying your discovery of Italian cinema this year.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, it's as we said before we started, I've always been a fan, but it's this endless, you know, pool of movies that I'm still discovering. And I've always loved Pasolini, Accattone, and Mamma Roma. This, The Gospel According to St. Matthew, I haven't seen before. But just before we jump into that, I'm curious, when did your exposure to Italian film start?
Okay. Well, my family is Italian American, so I grew up with, you know, Sofia Loren and Marcello Mastroianni as like part of the extended family. So that was always what I considered Italian cinema. And then in 1996, I was working as a video editor for CNN in San Francisco, and I was sent to the Rome Bureau because they needed someone, and I heard they needed someone, and I volunteered right away. I said, I'll go. So I went there.
Who wouldn't,
and
right?
I didn't know what to expect because I had never been to Italy. With all of my origins in Italy, of course, you know, I was really excited about going. And so when I got there, I found that it really wasn't the old world, you know, as we always thought. It was like very modern and bustling and contemporary.
Right.
And I spent 6 months there, and I really was immersed in the culture. 6 months, I was living in a neighborhood. You know, I was taking the bus to work every day. I experienced, you know, all of the strikes and everything, you know, that went with Italian daily life. So when I got back after spending 6 months there, I felt a really intense void. I was just walking around the streets of San Francisco aimlessly, just wanting to connect, you know, with what I had just left. And I spent a lot of time in the North Beach area, Little Italy. And then I thought cinema, well, maybe I can, you know, see some new movies that were being made there. And so then that's when I discovered Lina Wertmuller, Nanni Moretti, you know, Carlo Verdone, and, you know, all of these kind of 80s and 90s people. And then in 2001, when I was living in New York City, I discovered a film festival at Lincoln Center called Open Roads New Italian Cinema. I lived in the neighborhood and I saw these posters all over saying New Italian Cinema. And I was like, oh my God, what is this? So I went to that and I was really blown away because those were the new filmmakers, the people who are my age, you know, my peers, Alessandro Piva and Gabriele Muccino and all these people who are making these unbelievable films that, you know, were not coming to America. So that's when I started writing. A couple of years later, I started writing about it because I was so into these new movies because they really reflected contemporary Italy, the sights, the sounds, the situations. And so I sent a couple articles to Fra Noi, and they liked the articles and they took me on and gave me my own column. So that was December of 2004. I started writing about it. And then I started the blog later because all these films were being made available, you know, through videos, and I could only, I was limited to one article a month with Fra Noi because it was a monthly column. So then that's why I started the blog, because I was able to, you know, put five articles, you know,
right,
a month rather than just one. And then with Facebook, you know, because Facebook wasn't around in 2004 when I started writing for Fra Noi, then Facebook came around and all of these young filmmakers were on Facebook. And so I was writing to them privately, like, could I do an interview with you? Yeah, so that was a huge part of it. And then it just, you know, it just evolved from there. I've gone to film festivals. And so I started, you know, Italian Cinema Today because I wanted to talk about the new Italian filmmakers. I didn't want to talk, I love, you know, the old cinema, but I thought that that had its share, you know, of publicity. I wanted to talk about the new people, the young people who weren't really getting as much publicity as they should be getting. And these films were still really unseen because there weren't that many film festivals yet. There was just Open Roads. And then, you know, one or two films would make it here and get, you know, a release, a, you know, stateside release, but there weren't many. Mm-hmm. So then, you know, with more film festivals coming, word started getting out about Italian cinema. And now, I mean, there's, you know, there's so many bloggers writing about new Italian cinema now.
Yeah.
There's film festivals all over the country that are also streaming online. So a lot of people have really, you know, caught on to it. But what happened with the old cinema in the last year with all this pandemic stuff, I don't know. I just got into the old cinema because so much is available on Amazon and Criterion Channel, and even Netflix. Yeah. And I had never seen these films of the 1950s, like the Commedia all'Italiana. I saw a couple, but you know, Alberto Sordi, all the films that he made during that time, and Franco Valletti. She lived to be 100. She just passed away last year after her 100th birthday.
Right, I read that on your blog.
Yeah, there's so many of these people that I'm still, you know, discovering. And what's interesting is that I have found their relevance today in a lot of the filmmakers, because a lot of the filmmakers that I've interviewed through the years, you know, I've asked them, well, what do you think about the old Italian cinema? And some of them say, well, you know, it's gone. That's another era. You know, this is another time. But then there's others who really are influenced by it. Oh, and I think Paolo Sorrentino is, you know, a great example of that. I mean, he's very influenced by Fellini.
Yeah, I remember when I spoke to Joe, he said that too. Mm-hmm. We both mutually know.
He said
the same thing.
And that kind of led to the documentaries I made last year or the last couple of years when I was telling you Explore Lucania. Talks about the socioeconomic development of Basilicata from, you know, the early 20th century to the present. So it's through cinema. So as I was saying before, that we talk about the films of Luigi Di Gianni, and it's kind of what you see in the Gospel according to St. Matthew, that kind of poverty and that kind of, because he filmed in the 60s in Basilicata. And then the documentary ends now, you know, present day, and the evolution of that region and how, you know, it's become, you know, the 2018-19 capital of culture, European capital of culture. And then it was one of the five places by the New York Times to travel.
I've interviewed so many amazing people, and a lot of people were from this, you know, classic period, including the star of this film. I liked that interview where he talks about how people were telling him not to smoke because Jesus wouldn't smoke, and he passed away recently, right?
Yeah. Well, I had written to him because we were friends on Facebook. Talk about Facebook. So I sent him a message and I asked him if we could do an interview because I wanted to talk about this film for Easter. It was like during Lent. And he said, well, why don't we do a Skype interview? And I was like, okay. And so I don't know much about Skype, but the connection was terrible. So you can't really see him that well, but you could hear him. And we did it in Italian. And but he speaks great Italian. He was Spanish, but he speaks great Italian. And he died a couple months later. He passed away.
He had
a heart attack. He had some heart trouble.
Oh.
He was in the hospital and he passed away. So I believe my interview was the last interview I did with him.
Oh, wow.
But he was so wonderful. He was just loved talking about it. You know, he loved Elsa Morante.
Yeah.
She was a writer.
You can feel that he loved it.
He was like a Spanish, he was a student when he was in the movie, but he was a communist. And I think that's probably how I knew Pasolini.
Right.
He like met Pasolini at a party or something.
Yeah.
And I guess he walked in the door, Pasolini looked at him and he said, there's my Christ.
Yeah, I read that.
Yeah.
I read that because I know we'll go into a lot of the actors in this, but I mean, everybody he used were people in the communities and all the agriculture workers and the peasants. And, and it's incredible what he was able to achieve with people who weren't actors. But before I ask you about that, do you remember the first time you saw this film? Was it just in the last few years? As you said, you were going back to a lot of the classic films.
Pasolini was, I call him my first love of Italian cinema. I mean, I just loved his work. And I felt that when I came back from Rome in 96, I saw his films too. And I had lived when I was there in a neighborhood that was pretty far out. It was called San Paolo, and it was, you have to take two buses and a train to get there. And but I loved it. I loved living out in the suburbs, you know. Right. I really got this experience, you know, suburban life in Italy. And it was kind of like his films. There was the same atmosphere, because it wasn't like the center where everyone was, you know, beautiful and perfect, and there was art all over the place. It was, you know, kind of old. I was with the slums or anything, but it was, you know, older, and people dressed more normal, and you know, they were heavy, they were thin, they were this, they were that. It was, you know, actual, you know, Roman life. And when I saw this, Uccellini with Toto, that film, that was one of the first films I saw when, you know, I got back, and it just, I just fell in love with his filmmaking after that. And then Acapone, you know, Mamma Roma, and all those films, they all kind of, there's such a contemporary feeling to them, you know. I mean, they're black and white, they were made in the, you know, the 60s, but there's just a feeling, a timeless feeling to them. So I saw this film during that time, and I honestly didn't connect with it as much because it wasn't shot in a room. I was really looking for the Roman aspect. I thought again recently after being in Basilicata, because I did my genealogy search in 2001 after 9/11. That's a whole other story. I lived in New York City, was an editor during 9/11. But that experience being there inspired me to do what I always wanted to do, is find my family in Italy, because it was something I always procrastinated. I just put off. And you know, when you're in a situation where you're here one day and gone the next, you know, and so many people around us were gone, I said, I'm going to do this. I always wanted to do it. So that was 2001. And then I found them right away. And then I went to go meet them in 2002. And then that's when I really started learning about Basilicata, the region of Basilicata, because I went there and I spent like 3 months, and I just fell in love with that region. It really felt like, I always felt like Rome was my home. But then when I went down to Basilicata, and I'm like, these are my people. I mean, they're all short like me. I mean, there's a couple tall people, but there's all like, there's a few lucky ones.
All of us Southerners are pretty short.
So then I saw it again, and then I just realized the beauty of it. You know, we've all seen the Bible stories, but just the landscapes of Basilicata was really striking to me.
I thought this was incredible. And as you said, it doesn't feel like the Cecil B. DeMille biblical stories, or even like the Michelangelo sculptures of like this, and a lot of the paintings we know where this guy was like, you know, shredded with abs and long, beautiful hair and the beard and the blue eyes, very much like the actor in the 1977 miniseries. He looks, you know, his hair is pretty short. He's very thin. And he doesn't even have that beard. I mean, he's unshaven, but he's got a bit of a beard. He certainly has a resemblance to the Christ that we know. But as we said with the casting, I mean, everybody, no one looks glamorous. Everyone looks, as we were saying, they look ordinary. They look like people you would encounter anywhere. And I thought that was extraordinary. Even the angel, the young girl, like she's not like, as we see in a lot of movies, like beautiful blonde angel. Like she just like, she's quite, you know, she's pretty, but she looks very like an ordinary girl that you meet anywhere. She doesn't have this like, quote unquote, angelic quality. So I thought it was fascinating how he used these people who weren't actors, because as we were discussing before we recorded, they dubbed everything in Italy and they didn't even shoot with sound. And I thought he got them to a point where they just had to be there and don't do anything. And their presence alone spoke volumes. Like right off the top, he starts with this incredible close-up of the young Mary, and then cutting back and forth to Joseph. And it's so intimate. It's right on their faces. And he hangs with the music was incredible.
How are
as
you
well.
Pregnant?
Yeah. And then I love that. He's looking, and then they go to they go to a wider shot, and you see that she's pregnant, and then the angel appears, of course, to say,
"Wow, okay." Okay, I love that.
Yeah, it's funny because Joseph's baffled, you know, like what, like
I have to go for a walk. I need to get out of here. I need to clear my head. Yeah,
no,
well,
it's so fascinating.
There's a lot you brought up in that commentary. First of all, Pasolini was an atheist.
Yeah, well, that's another thing.
Okay.
Yeah, non-believer.
Communist and an atheist. And he was called on by the Pope John Paul the 23rd, I think.
I think so. Yeah.
To go to Assisi. Did you hear the story? He was called to go to Assisi. And there was traffic there because of the papal confusion. There was a big traffic jam. So Pasolini ended up getting stuck in his hotel, and he read the entire Bible. He read all of the books of the Bible. And when he got to the Gospel according to St. Matthew, he felt like he needed to interpret that. He needed to make a movie out of one of these gospels, and he chose that one because he felt that was the most humble, that was the most realistic, and that's the reason why there's not a lot of dialogue in the film, because he didn't want to interpret it. He said that he was making a film about not just about what happened, but about 2,000 years of interpretation of it. So he just wanted to leave it with its mystic qualities of the 2,000 years of interpretation, but he didn't want to put his own interpretation into it. And so in an interview, someone said, well, how can you, as a non-believer, make this this film about, you know, Christ? And then Pasolini said, you know, not quoting exactly, if you call me a non-believer, you know more about me than I know about myself, because he said that he was nostalgic about the possibility of being a believer, non-believer.
Right.
So he was exploring, you know, his beliefs himself through this film. As far as the people, all of the people who were in it, who are now professional actors, that kind of speaks to the style of neorealism. This film is not a neorealism film. It's not a neorealistic film, because those films were made in a very specific period, between 1943 and, you know, the very early 50s, because Cinecittà was, you know, damaged, so they weren't able to work in Cinecittà. And also, those neorealistic films were very specifically to mirror the struggles that Italians were going through in the wake of the war and the poverty and the structures, you know, being demolished and everything.
Right.
So that
very
was,
much about what was happening at
that time. Yeah, but this film, Pasolini's film, has neorealistic elements to it.
Yeah, I think the style, particularly.
Yeah, there's
the documentary
stage.
Right.
Yeah, and you know, everything is shot, you know, on location, and also the fact that practically none of these actors were, you know, I don't think any of them were really professionals.
No, I don't think so.
A couple of them went on to maybe work in other Pasolini films, and there was one who worked in the character of James. That actor went on to work in Juliet of the Spirits. He had like a small part. I think that of everything that was professional, non-professional, the most moving part is the music.
I've had that in my head, actually.
Luis Bacalov. Now,
yes.
I actually wrote down some notes on him, because he used songs by Odetta Holmes,
yeah,
who is an American singer, actress, guitarist, lyricist, and civil and human rights activist. And then Blind Willie Johnson, who is an American gospel blues singer. And you, I mean, that music is so strong.
Oh my God, and yeah.
Something with him is that
He had a real talent with music. Like, yeah. they seem to like contrast what's happening in a way, but yet it works. Like, you know, when he puts Odetta's song, plays that song, for example, sometimes I feel like a motherless child, but he puts it on when they're all there to celebrate the birth of Christ, which goes mm-hmm. against the lyrics, but yet it mm-hmm. fits so beautifully. I don't know if you know as to why he chose that. I don't know, but it works for me.
But I think it's interesting because that precedes the scene when they come and get all the children.
Oh, that's right.
Kill the baby. So I'm wondering if it had anything to do with
that. Possibly. That scene is so brutal.
It's brutal in every interpretation. But I mean, this one, because it really is so real, it's brutal there.
Oh, my God. But
Louis Sabakalov actually worked with Sergio Corbucci. On Django, and then I think it was made in 1966.
A couple of years later.
Yeah, and then he in the Django Unchained
with Tarantino. Yeah,
he did the music for that as well, and he just passed away in 2017. So he's another one who continued to stay relevant.
Oh, wow!
He also did the Il Postino soundtrack.
Oh no way!
Yeah, which was beautiful.
Wow! Yeah, the music in this just blew me away, particularly towards the end when after he's crucified and put in the tomb, and then as he resurrects and the stone comes down and the music comes right at that point. And I'm not sure which song that was. I don't know if you would know offhand, but the song, it just sort of, it had this celebratory feel, you know, it was so like, it almost put an energy through me, borderline wanting to dance or something, like, or chant. Like, I just thought that was just perfect. I mean, his use of music at the right moments. I mean, I know, you know, Scorsese has that talent as well, and Kubrick, and so many filmmakers, but I don't think people think about Pasolini in that way, because I thought his use of music was always amazing and not obvious as well.
I think it also had a lot to do with the composer. Just he chose those songs. I
mean, yeah,
he arranged it also, and he also did Fellini's City of Women, so he stayed there with Italian cinema. There were a lot of parallels with Fellini and Pasolini. I mean, also, if their styles of filmmaking were very different, Pasolini wrote for Fellini, and I think he worked on La Strada and Knights of Cabiria, because he
that's right
he knew the dialect of the Romans, so he helped, you know, with writing those screenplays. And there's some really beautiful pictures, some really beautiful photographs of Pasolini and Fellini.
You know, when people think, why would a Marxist non-believer, openly gay man make up the story of Christ? But if you look at the story, I mean, people describe it in a very sentimental, idealistic way. And he really, to me, showed what Jesus really was. That he was a revolutionist, that he hated money, hated people who were after money. All they cared about was money. And he was angry. This is an angry Jesus. He was like a union leader, you know, the way he would debate, the way he would call people out on their hypocrisy. He was condescending. He was dismissive. Mm-hmm. I mean, when he was talking to those high priests and they're challenging him, and he would challenge them back, often with questions. And they took him for granted, I think. I don't think they realized how smart he was. And, you know, he was openly going against their laws and their traditions and showing them how hypocritical they were. And of course, people wanted to do away with him because they were afraid of him, like any other figure who's been a revolutionist ever since Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, you know, so many people over the years who will die for their causes. I think it brought it, I think he really brings it back to what Jesus was about, which was, okay, you know, why don't we, let's forgive each other, let's love each other, let's not be so concerned with money. Why don't we focus on the present today in this moment? And why don't we have faith, you know? And I'm like, you know what? This is still so relevant because we're still in a society that often, most of the time, is mainly impressed with money.
Yeah, and, more than ever.
Exactly. And value others, not on who they are, but what they have. And that's what he hated. And a lot of the other biblical films or stories I've seen, and I could be totally wrong because I'm not an expert on the films on Jesus, but you only saw him angry at that money lending scene, you know, when you take the money and throw it. And he's usually very calm, very quiet. In this film, he's very an angry guy. And he's angry because of what he's seeing. But also he was flawed too. I mean, there were some aspects of vanity I felt like he was, you know, because of his miracles, he wanted that one scene where he shows up in that village. He's like, why is no one praising me?
Because it's okay to die for him, to give your life for him.
yeah, things like that, which I thought, okay, and contradicting himself, well, I'm not here to bring peace, I'm here to take up the sword. But later on he was totally against, you know, you saw when they came to arrest him, he told everyone, don't be violent, don't do anything. And I like how much they show of everybody else, and him included to an extent, only towards the end when, of course, the famous scene where he's asking God not to let this happen, when he starts to get afraid the night before he's going to be arrested. But you see his God, the apostles, how they lack courage. And he said, you will lack courage and you will fall apart. You will run away. You will deny you know me. And Judas, of course, you know, sells him out again, what, for money, and then ultimately hangs himself. And I forget how relevant this story is. And a lot of things, you know, when they see, particularly as you said earlier, now more than ever, we see often people saying they're religious, but yet don't do anything Jesus says. And I see so often on the internet when people compare that to Jesus, like, do people remember Jesus was basically a hippie? You know, but yet if he existed today, people who say that they're Christian or Catholic, I'm not saying everybody, but often the kid, they would hate him, you know, they would do away with him, they'd call him a bum, which is what happened to him at that time. You know, I was fascinated by that. I haven't seen a better portrayal. I don't know how you could compare that with like other films on Jesus that you've seen.
Yeah, well, I grew up watching those films, you know, the Ten Commandments and all those biblical films.
Yeah,
this one is so much more, it's just so real.
And, yeah, exactly, yeah.
Yeah, and I also appreciate the non-actors, you know, the non-professional actors who were in it. I think that they give a sense of authenticity.
Yeah.
You know, I think it was nominated for an Oscar for costume. And when Pasolini was creating the look of Christ, he referenced art, Byzantine art. So that's kind of why he has that, you know, those eyebrows and he's got that simple look. He was going for, you know, more of a Byzantine look rather than, you know, traditional, like those elaborate, you know, costumes that we had seen in other films.
Yeah, no, it's bare bones filmmaking. Yeah, it's very, even that scene where he walks on water. I mean, it's not what you saw in the other films. It just kind of is what it is. You see him. And then I love when the other guy, he tells him to join him and then he thinks he's falling. And then he says, don't you have any faith? And I thought that was so interesting because I think his teachings, whether you're a believer or not, I mean, his teachings are so beneficial to anyone's life in the here and now. I also thought it was interesting that when it came time for the crucifixion and the torture, of course, and you know, we saw the Pat Mel Gibson,
which was also filmed there.
I read that this morning. I didn't know that. Perhaps it didn't interest him, but there's hardly even any blood on him. I mean, I don't think that was necessarily because this was in the mid 60s. I don't think Pasolini would have censored it. Maybe that is why, but it's not very violent. It's not very bloody. I mean, is that something that
I just owe that to the style of Pasolini. I mean, what he wanted to do. I don't think he felt that he needed to get that gore and, you know, blood like we saw. I mean, feeling the atmosphere of the film. And I think that's all of Pasolini's films. They all have that sense of simplicity and the atmosphere. There's like a peaceful atmosphere to them. I mean, even Mama Roma, for everything that she was going through, there's those silences. There's so much that, Ettore says with his eyes. And there was a lot of that in this film too. And I don't know if that's because of, you know, this one, they were non-professional, so he didn't really want to give them, you know.
Well, that's what I thought. Yeah, because even when he gets arrested at the trial, I mean, there's a lot more dialogue there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's, again, it was all dubbed, but I don't know if he intentionally, because he was shooting from the POV of the apostles, mm-hmm. so it's further back. I think it worked to his benefit because it gave the feeling of how they were helpless. They couldn't help it. So it's further back and, you know, you see them losing their courage and he didn't have to go in close. He could just dub it later with some, you know, it's done so, so briefly. Like, oh, you're blasphemy, then you're dead. You know,
right, and think about the use of non-professional actors there. I mean, they probably did feel helpless. I mean, they didn't know what to do rather than an actor who's going to say, okay, I'm going to act like I'm helpless. You know,
of course,
I mean, they and all of the extras were, you know, from Matera or from Barile. Yeah. They were from all of the, you know, they were from Puglia. I guess he got a couple and then Calabria. So these were all like peasants, you know, who made a little extra money working on the film. And I think that the most striking part for me, as far as, you know, the acting was, amazing with these non-professionals and the presence of Arazikwi, was where it was shot. I mean, just the Matera and Barile and those wine cantinas. I mean, I had talked about that with you, and I printed part of this interview that I did with Daniele Bracuto, who is, he was the president of the Barile Cineforum that was dedicated to Pasolini. So he was kind of a Pasolini, expert in the area. I asked him what qualities of Bassa Legata attracted Pasolini to the region, and he said it was the purity of the landscapes.
That's what I wondered myself. Yeah,
the roughness of the structures and the authenticity of the people. Right. Now, just that line alone, all of that comes through in the film.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
The film has look at the Mary. She's got, you know, she's total, she's the essence of purity.
Yeah.
Then his mother in the film, she has the sense of purity in the way she reacted to, you know, her son being crucified. Just that strong sense of sadness. Yeah. And Pasolini said that she called on how she felt when her son, you know, his brother was killed in the mourning that she went through over that. So, I mean, there's a lot of authenticity in this film. I mean, you could walk in, you could go to Bassa Legata and you're going to see exactly those structures there today. Yeah,
it's incredible.
So I don't think he put a lot into that.
No, you know, he just shot it straight.
It was more just the human, like you mentioned, just the human aspect of Jesus about how he was, you know, so human. He wasn't perfect. He had flaws. He had a temper.
Absolutely.
You know, he didn't have a lot of patience. But he was very, you know, he was very passionate about his cause, you know?
Oh, yeah,
He hated, like you said, he hated the money and the false people, and that came through.
He is Pasolini. Pasolini is him in a way.
I think Pasolini shared a lot of those traits. When he was in that hotel, you know, in Assisi reading the Bible and reading the Gospels, I think he's like, oh my God, not to, no pun intended. I really, I connect with this person that
I think so.
Believe in.
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of these labels get thrown around, socialist, Marxist, you know, you know, even in the IMDb description, it's like, oh, he portrayed him as a Marxist. And I'm like, yeah, but I mean, you know, when people hear those kind of labels, they dismiss it. It's like, he's not, it's not, it's not like a left or right cause. I mean, what he's saying, just, it's just about living. It makes sense. It's like, okay, well, maybe we should see more about our own self-worth and what's, you know, and the people, what can we do for our fellow neighbors? And, you know, I mean, it's not like he was saying, talking budgets or
yeah, you know, a lesson from it. Which version did you see? Did you see the dubbed version in English or subtitled?
No, I saw the subtitle that I read, of course, last night. This was colorized and then cut, like 40 minutes of it was cut. So I imagine that's a terrible version.
You saw a colorized version?
There's a colorized version of this.
Oh my gosh, I never saw that.
Yeah,
I want to recommend.
I saw the Italian one.
Yeah. That you see the version on Vimeo. There's a version on Vimeo and it's dubbed. Okay, I think that everyone should see this version because you can pay, if you speak English, you can pay attention to the film more. And also, the subtitles in Pasolini's film are written very strangely.
It's very poetic, yeah. Sometimes it's hard to make sense of what he was saying.
Yeah, they're almost written like the Bible, like, you know, the different way of speaking. Right. But the dubbed version, I mean, I never liked to watch dubbed versions of anything, but this is different because, I mean, the original was dubbed anyway. But it's easier to understand, even if you just watch it like once, you know, maybe watch it the very first time you see the movie, then you could see the background, you could pay attention to like the locations and the expressions with Jesus. And because, you know, when I was reading the subtitles, I wasn't paying attention to Jesus' expressions. And so I wasn't getting all the anger.
Yeah, I had to pause it a few times just because some of the wording was a little confusing.
Yeah. Watch that version. You know,
I didn't know there was an English one. Okay, so I'll have to check that out.
I'll send you the link.
Okay, please do.
I've watched the one on Amazon. I have, I have a DVD somewhere. I brought everything.
Yeah.
But the DVD also had, that was like the very first version I watched before it was streaming. And yeah, it has those weird subtitles. But I would check out the one on Vimeo. It makes it a little more easy to comprehend.
Okay. Yeah. No, I'm
going to check that out. There's a lot to take in.
It's an intense film. Yeah. It certainly is an intense film, but I got to thank you again for suggesting it because I really loved it. I thought it was so powerful.
I'm so glad. Like I said, I'm enjoying your discovery of Italian cinema.
Thank you.
you're like a kid in a candy store.
I am. I'm seeing so much and there's so many more that I want to see. But I think everybody, I don't feel this is a religious film in the sense that, well, I'm Christian and I'm Catholic and it's Easter, so let's put it on. I really think this is for everybody because whether you're a believer or not believer or agnostic or atheist or whatever, it's really just about a way to live. I mean, it's such a relevant story. And I don't think people think about Jesus in that way anymore. It's just been mythologized. Something along those lines. Way too much.
He said he wanted to do, though. He wanted to bring that 2,000 years of interpretation. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think it holds up, you know, almost 57 years later, beautifully.
I just want to plug this. Radio Voltude is... Rio Nero Voltude is right next to Budile where it was filmed. So this is all the same land. So if people ever want to connect with that, there's a radio show that once in a while I contribute to, I do a report for. It's called Radio Voltude. And you can find it on Mixcloud. And it's just like, it's live every Sunday morning at like 4 o'clock in the morning Eastern time because it's 10 in the morning there. Yeah. But it's broadcast live, you know, from that region, from, you know, Pasolini's stomping grounds while he made this. And they have it live with a video and then they archive it on Mixcloud. So if anyone wants to listen to it, just go to Mixcloud and put Radio Voltude in. The accent is on the U. They always make fun of me because I say Voltude, but it's Radio Voltude. So I'm going to listen to listeners if they want to do that.
Well, yeah, I'll leave the link in the description box below for that. Of course, your fantastic blog, which I frequently check out, and it's fantastic if anyone just wants to know about not only the history of cinema, but so much of modern cinema of today, which, as my talk with Joe in the last 30 or more years, we don't even hear about that many Italian movies like they used to in the 50s and 60s, where it was so international. So I'll leave that below. Janine, thanks again for coming on. I'm really glad that we finally got the chance to talk. It was a blast. And thanks again for suggesting this film, because I really enjoyed it.
Hey, I'm so happy.
Yeah, no, me too. And I also have a Patreon membership if anyone is interested in becoming a member, where there's bonus content there created by me. The link is in the description box below for that. And there's also an audio version of this podcast, which doesn't have everything that's on the YouTube channel. But if you're on the go and just want to listen, it's on any of the audio platforms, Apple, Spotify, places like that. If this is your first time on my YouTube channel, please consider subscribing. It's free to do so by pressing the Robert Bellissimo at the Movies logo. You'll see it floating above my head right here to your top left. In just a second, just click on that and then click the bell in order to get a notification every time I release a new video or go live. And thanks again so much, Janine, and we will see everyone in the next episode.